I think the most important thing is to understand that you cannot panic every time that there's a problem. Every crisis that we had, the retail public sells off its holdings. It doesn't return to the market for a few years. And in that time, they not only realize losses, but they also miss opportunities.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews.
Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name is Rick Nusky. I'm the luckiest man on the planet, I'd have to say right now. I'm on the line with Leo Gantz. How are you, Leo?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Very well, thank you very much. Now, Leo and I have been just talking briefly about the global pandemic that's upon us. You know, we've got a health crisis globally. We've got economic crisis globally. And we're going to be deep diving into some of that throughout the call tonight. But Leo, I'd love to, if we could please, to give a little bit of context to tonight's call. I think it's important if we could if you could share with the My Future Business audience a little bit about yourself and what you do and how it is that you came to be doing what you are doing today.
So my personal story has to do a little bit with my childhood. When I was 13, my father's business went under. Mm-hmm. And I had to start working because I wanted stuff, right? So I started painting decks. I started babysitting, coaching basketball to the first graders. And by the time I was 16, I've already saved up some money. Like this is 1997, and I saved up like $20,000. So the banker, he was like, "You have savings. Why don't you invest them?" And I said, what does that mean? He explained that. And he said, get your parents to come here and sign a waiver and you can start trading as a minor. So I actually did that. And I started investing when I was 16 years old. And my father's business, my father's second business went under when I was 18, etc. Mm-hmm. So my head became fixed on what is going wrong here. So I learned about businesses. I learned about entrepreneurship. And that's how I started to be a businessman and entrepreneur and investor myself, learning a lot from, you know, tragedy, personal tragedy in the family, etc. And then about 4 years ago, I said, look, this cannot be a unique story. There's so many people out there that what they're lacking is either they were not educated at home properly on businesses and entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. or by the system. So why don't I create a platform that talks about my own journey and what's going on and covers specific opportunities, etc. And that's how WealthResearchGroup.com was launched as a free financial newsletter to basically find a way to take the 6 to 8 hours a day that I spend on the phone with companies, with CEOs, with other fund managers, etc. And what I'm doing with my personal time, reading books about investing and running businesses, and congest it into articles that the readers can, get in their, the subscribers can get in their inbox.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Leo. I've actually seen this this newsletter. It's got some wonderful content. It's got a whole host of different investment strategies. It's very much well worth getting your hands on. Now, Leo, I know that you are known as the Globinaire, and you love to travel. You've been to over 40 countries. You've experienced most of the amazing attractions that you can find throughout the world. Now, I wonder, with everything going on that's happening today, how has that affected you? And what are you doing right now to, counter that for yourself?
Yeah, we really caught a lucky break because we literally were doing 2 years around the world until January 31st when I signed a lease for 1 year after like 2 years of Airbnbs. So it was so lucky. entire stay-at-home orders and quarantines happened like a month after I just settled and put everything in order. This is going to be temporary and they're flexing and relaxing all the stay-at-home orders around the world right now.
Yeah.
And they're doing it for a good reason. There's so much data right now about COVID-19 and its lethality and contagiousness levels, that we know so much that we don't have to stay at home anymore.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. there's high risk groups, and there are people that this not only does not affect, but there is less even than the seasonal flu to most people. The problem that we had at first was that many assumed that the exponential rate of growth for infections mm-hmm. will mean and result an exponential rate of growth for severely, acute patients.
Yeah.
And that happened to not be the case. There's a linear line that goes up for those who need respirators.
Yes.
And so basically what the world's governments are facing right now is, how do we get the herd immunity? Do we get it by going the payphone road, where about 10 to 15% of the population are in grave danger because of this, and yep. therefore we can hit, or do we shelter them? Do we create situations like they did in China, for example, where the high-risk groups, they're assigned a government employee that helps them with everything, brings them to their house, everything, so they can stay quarantined mm-hmm. while the rest create the natural herd immunity? Or do we wait for a vaccine, et cetera? So it's all up in the air right now. Personally, because my businesses are home-based and online, my situation has not been deterred in a way that is grave.
Yeah.
And our daughter is actually homeschooled, so it hasn't been that difficult. Actually, the neighbors are piggybacking.
It's funny, because, if you're an introvert and you don't go out that much anyway, I've heard a lot of people say, well, it's really not affecting me all that greatly. Now, I'd like to go back and just consider in 2008, 2009, I know that you took advantage of the real estate situation at the time. Is there, I guess, a silver lining for those who are looking to invest now?
Oh, 100%. Every crisis under the fiat monetary system, so since 1971, when governments created, or when Richard Nixon basically took the world off of a gold standard and created a situation where banks, they issue credit for the rest of the economy. And they do that according to their own policies and cycles. In other words, how does money supply grow and contract? It grows and contracts with how much banks are lending to individuals, to companies, and how much governments are issuing their own debt. That is how money or credit or currency is grown and contracted. And every crisis under this system, it follows a very predictable routine. First of all, there's a credit contraction. Nobody trusts each other. There's no borrowing. You saw that in 2000 and 2008. You saw it more severely. And in 2020, right now, you saw it to the limit. Literally, in that week in March, I assume you know what I'm talking about,
yep.
The week where we had circuit breakers every day. If the Federal Reserve Bank and other central banks have not created liquidity out of nothing, basically forcing liquidity into the system,
yeah,
the system would have been shut down. We would have had panics, etc. Our global economy works on credit. So first of all, we have the credit contraction, then you have the reaction, because they're just not going to let the economy go under global. You're going to have riots and problems around the world if left alone.
Yeah.
And so they're always going to come in, and they're always going to inflate the credit and liquidity into the system and bring back confidence. That scenario, that cycle, creates opportunity every time. Now, where does the opportunity lie? That depends on where all this fresh credit goes to. After the 2000 dot-com bubble burst, all that fresh credit went into real estate and then went to subprime real estate. And then you had the bubble there.
Yeah.
Now, if you knew it was a bubble, then you knew how to capitalize on it, etc. In investing in business, you don't have to have a perfect trade. So many people are saying, I'm going to call the top, I'm going to call the bottom. That is what's called a perfect trade, and that so rarely happens. It's not even a business model. What you need to do is have just a few good trades.
Yeah.
So, okay. In 2008-09, once the credit was contracted and then inflated, for the first 2 years, you saw a big boom in commodities. And then since 2012, you're seeing a big boom in tech, what we now call the FANG stocks. So it just depends on where that money goes. What's different about this time, really different about this time, is that when the Federal Reserve created credit now, it's not only the banking system and the elites that are getting the credit first. In other words, it's not only creating this wealth gap, but we also have helicopter money. This is going to Main Street, to small businesses, to the average person.
Yes.
And that is a big change, because many people think that the elites have the majority of the wealth, but actually the sum collective of all of small businesses in America, they control 70% of GDP. Consumption is 70% of the U.S. economy. So where these people are going to go next with their helicopter money, which I believe is only the beginning, we're going to see many more fiscal policies from Trump and whoever comes next, if he's going to lose, and if he wins, then his administration is going to keep on giving money to the average person and all sorts of programs. And where that money goes, that's where you need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder... Given that GDP's between 5 to 10% drop, and you know, it seems to me that there seems to be a lot of paper money, bonds being created by governments and sold to other countries. Is this bucket never ending? Can we just continue on this way? Will there be a bottom in terms of how much?
Sure, that's a great question. It's the question of all questions, right?
Yeah.
So. And we wrote about it a lot at wealthresearchgroup.com. If you go to the website and click on the top menu, you'll see a special reports button.
Yep.
It's basically a wealth library filled with free download PDFs. A lot of them talk about what we call the free money or will there be inflation? What is going to happen with QE? How does this, what's the price of basically expanding our deficits throughout history? And we are also very much very big investors into gold and silver. If you go to wealthresearchgroup.com, for example, /gold playbook, that's the most comprehensive manual about gold investing, silver investing online. What you need to basically think about is the fact that these deficits do matter. And what they end up doing is eroding the purchasing power of your savings in fiat currencies. For example, in 1971, 1 ounce of gold cost $35. Today, the same ounce of gold, literally the same ounce, nothing has happened to it. It costs over $1,700. In other words, flip it to you had $1,700 in your pocket in U.S. notes in 1971. What they purchased back then, they purchased about $35 worth now. So saving in fiat currency has been a fool's errand. And saving in other forms of money has been a phenomenal way to save. Now, it's not been a phenomenal way to grow your wealth exponentially. If you want to do that, you need to get into productive assets, because an ounce of gold will always be an ounce of gold. It doesn't grow another ounce out of it.
Yeah.
Yes. But as a way of saving, as a way of conserving purchasing power, it has been the ultimate one until recently. So you have to understand that when governments do what they do, there is a price to pay. Some governments are backed by such robust economies, such as the U.S. economy, where they can print so much. They don't really print, but they can add so much currency into the system in a rapid pace to counter crisis, that crisis evaporates real fast. In other words, if you have a recession or a slowdown, it's only a few weeks or a few months. It doesn't lag for years and years. It doesn't linger on because the economy is ready to snap back real fast. Now, that's in the U.S. Other countries that have tried to do that, I can, you know, go through the list, but, you know, Argentina, Yugoslavia, Belarus, Zimbabwe is the classic example. They've not been able to do that because their economies are not robust and they just cannot sustain the amount of currency that's being created. Venezuela is the most recent one. They go through inflation or hyperinflation, and except for about six countries in the 20th century, all countries have seen some sort of an inflationary nightmare. So there is a price to pay. In the U.S., that price is much lower.
Yeah.
But that's the problem is that other countries are paying the price. 50% of the U.S. dollars are not inside of the American banking system. They're outwards. They're in all of the other 196 countries. So they're exporting all that inflation out. That's really important to understand. Other people are paying the price for this. And what the U.S. does is it grows a bigger military and it becomes a bigger superpower at the expense of all the other people that live in other regions. So there is a price to pay.
Yeah.
And at the end, Nick, what's going to happen is they're going to need to restructure that debt.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you spending some time and helping me dig a little bit deeper here for everybody who's on the show tonight, because they do thrive on this content. They love listening to this, learning from this. Now, I wonder, is there a bigger picture at play here? Is there an economic structure that the general public are not aware about? For example, are we in the midst of a transformational shift away from fiat currency into something like a cryptocurrency, or is there a bigger plan at play, do you think?
So most global plans are accidental. I know that is a shocker, but that is true.
Yeah.
If you look at all global systems for currency, they happen by accident. There's no grand design. Do not think that the G7 countries, the G20, don't think that they can sit down and agree on a currency system just out of the blue. If you look at all of our currency systems for about 800 or 900 years back, they all happen gradually and by mistake. And the classic one is, you can see Richard Nixon on the 15th of August, 1971. He said, I am going to suspend the convertibility of the U.S. dollar to gold temporarily. Understand this. He said on live television to the entire planet, this is temporary. We're 50 years into it.
Yeah.
So you can see how things happen by mistake. The Bretton Woods system that created in 1944, the system that backed gold with U.S. dollars also happened by accident or by mistake, not by grand design. It happened on the backs of the World War II. They were just forced into creating some sort of a solution. Global issues do not get resolved as quick as national solutions happen, because nationally you can control much more. You have your elected body, etc. You can create plans and legislate them. When you try to do something on a global scale, it just doesn't happen. Case in point, what's happening with oil. Last week it reached a negative 40, minus 40 price. Yes, a minus 40 price at the evening of the expiration of options. Now, if this was a national issue, it wouldn't have happened. There would be capital controls. There would be something to offset this. But since oil trades on a global scale, you cannot coordinate something for all governments to see. So if you're looking for some sort of a big plan, big design, and you can see that for Bitcoin, for example, there hasn't been any coordinated response from governments, because each one has their own idea about it. So I don't think there's a grand design that we're missing out.
Yeah.
Wealth Research Group, for example, in 2017, in April of 2017, profiled not only Bitcoin as an opportunity, but Ethereum when it was $12 a coin, before it went to 1,000. So in our newsletter, we do cover specific opportunities when we find them, and and the readers can, you know, check them out. So there have been many opportunities in terms of the cryptocurrencies for their future. I have to say that it's a mixed bag. Most cryptocurrencies are not currencies at all. They're little startups, and they may or may not have a future. But if you're investing in venture and small cap startups, you know that the default rate is about 95%. So you need to really know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much again for sharing this insight. It's wonderful. I wonder, you talked momentarily about superpowers earlier on, and just to link it back to what's happening in the world right now, and this idea of debt and, you know, trying to get out of situations, is the interdependent nature of a global economy sustainable, do you think? Mm-hmm. And what do you think might change post this pandemic time?
It's a great question. I do think that interdependency will always create a problem, because, but it also creates opportunity. So in other words, it's there's no perfect system, and we, as the human race, we haven't been able to figure out a perfect system. So we're always going to be perfecting a system, and that means that there are always going to be issues and opportunities, etc. That's what's that is what value creation is all about. That is what business is all about. Right now, what I think is happening across the board is that board of directors for the Fortune 500 companies and for many multinational companies are going to tell their CEOs, we're not going to trust China for everything. In other words, you cannot have a situation where 80% of the world's air conditioners are produced in China. We can't have a situation where essential medicinal products are created in China.
Yeah.
What we have to do is we have to bring it locally. Now, we can't compete with the Chinese on costs. So, and just so you know, Nick, there are 50 countries right now that produce cheaper than China. So the West cannot produce as cheap as these slave labor countries. And that's not what should happen. What board of directors should pressure CEOs to do is to use 3D printing, AI, blockchain technology, robotics, automation, and supercomputers to bring manufacturing back to home, but create a situation where the high-paying jobs are going to be in engineering and tech, etc., building these sustainable factories that in the end will produce cheaper than even slave laborers. But it's gonna take time. So we need to invest in this so that outside of New York, for example, in the open country, there are gonna be factories that are fully automated. And therefore, if you want to have food and everything else, it's gonna be sourced from local.
Yeah.
But obviously it's not gonna be made with, you know, humans involved, or not a lot of humans are gonna be involved. That's what I think is going to happen. That's what I think the next 10 to 20 years are going to be like for America and for other, more modern countries. Now, China is much more modern than people believe. For example, in America, you have to commute to work about 2 hours a day. For most people, you have to go in and out of the city. In China, for example, people live about 300 to 400 kilometers from the city, and they get there in 20 minutes on magnetic levitation trains. If you haven't been to China the last 10 years, you still have that mentality that you think, hey, it's all rice paddies it's not. And all Fortune 500 companies have research centers. It's definitely something else. They have a national mandate. They want to bring their middle class to $15,000 a year from $10,000 now. And that's half of the United States. So the United States, you're considered middle class from $30,000 and up net. So in other words, about 60K a year gets you to the middle class before taxes.
Yeah.
So they are very strong, and they will continue to be very strong. I mean, the Chinese.
Yeah.
And by 2035, they're going to have a similar military budget to the United States. So they're growing fast.
Yeah.
And that means that there will be a cold war between these countries. And it's going to revolve around manufacturing and sustainability. So I think that is something that's going to be very important in the post-COVID-19 world. I think we're also going to see a situation where there's going to be a lot more prevention. In other words, governments now understand that preventing pandemics is as important as preventing war, right? We spend all this money on super tanks, on, you know, jet planes, you know, fighter jets, submarines, mm-hmm. etc., that never gets used, right? We're always preparing, and there's, so it's going to be the same way with pandemics. You're going to see a lot more research going into, you know, bat caves and all that kind of stuff to prevent this in advance. There are 7 coronaviruses that already live within our bodies. There are a million more that are out there. There are super bacteria that are antibiotics.
Yeah,
they're not gonna. They can't solve them. We already have around 700,000 deaths every year from bacteria that are not going to be challenged by our current antibiotics. So there's so much research that's going to be happening, and I think that is a key, a key to the future. Every industry is going to be impacted in some shape or form.
Yeah,
I don't think that what you're hearing now, the end of tourism and all that, I don't think that's happening at all. But I do think that you're going to see measures put in place in airports, etc. And we are going to lose more of our freedoms in order for people to feel safer. I think that is a big trend around the world. People are willing to lose their privacy. I don't subscribe to that theory, so I don't like that. Mm. But
the big brother approach.
I think that is gonna stay with us. Unfortunately, most people are gonna substitute their privacy for safety. I don't know where you stand on this. I don't like it, but I think that's gonna happen. Most people, giving those two options, they would rather have safety.
Well, you know, I like to balance the risk versus reward, and I think to myself,
of course,
the government at the moment are trying to encourage. They're not making it mandatory that you download a tracking app that says if you are within 1.5 meters or 2 meters. This particular app that you download can notify you that, hey, you've been in contact with somebody who's been identified as a COVID-19 case, report to your health service. Now, I wonder, again, I mean, conspiracy theories abound. They say, well, look, is this a big brother approach? And I wonder, is that sort of a thing happening where you are with regard to software apps and controls like that?
So my answer to this and to all of these questions about, how the government uses technology, the potential for abuse is always there. In some countries where the rule of law is more prevalent, then it most likely will not get used 90% of the time for bad scenarios. In other words, there are countries where governments are going to abuse these systems. In other countries that are more, that are just more stable, most of the time, these technologies are used for good purposes, but it's those 10% of the time that are nasty. And there are factions within every government and within every agency of every government that will abuse their powers. So it's always going to be important to see how governments self-enforce these measures on themselves. And if you've seen history, you know that within governments, if they are watching themselves, it doesn't work. They will cover for each other, and that is the big problem. Yes, what we need is for private companies to be assigned with the work of watching over governments.
Yeah, the other way around.
Yes, we need to have an allocation out of government budget that pays private companies to look over government. That is one of the best ways to stop what's going on and to make it to incentivize these private companies by by finding ways for them to really dig into that, and for the price to unveil scandals to be better than the price of covering up for the government.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing this. I wonder, are there, given what you know about investments, I wonder if there's some sort of a strategy that people can look forward to. What's on the upside of all of this for mum and dad investors?
With investors that are retail or part-time investors, I think the most important thing is to understand that you cannot panic every time that there's a problem, because every crisis that we had, the retail public sells off, it liquidates its holdings, it doesn't return to the market for a few years, and in that time they not only realize losses, but they also miss opportunities. The markets, if you look at 100 years back, the markets are the best way to create a fortune in passive income, I mean. The S&P 500, for example, is up 8% a year on average. But out of those 100 years, only 4 years has the markets really closed a calendar year up 8%. So let me repeat that. If you have one hand in boiling water and your other hand in ice water, that is usually how markets feel. They're either red hot or ice cold. But if you merge those two buckets and put both of your hands in the mild water, that is the average. And that is the rate of growth for the markets. Every dollar put into the stock market 200 years ago, so from 1812, has become $707,000. Every $1. But if you have missed the best 40 days of trading for the past 40 years, you have lost about 75% of the return. So if you try to go in and out of the markets, you will lose. Statistically, you cannot pick bottoms and the right time to enter and to exit. Statistically, 93% of investors underperform the S&P 500. And it's so bad that a Dahlberg study from 1990, it showed that investors in the best mutual fund of the 80s, a mutual fund that returned about 29%, the average investor within that fund made 4.5%, because he couldn't buy and hold the fund. He just went in and out of the fund with every time that there's an influenza breaking there, there's a oil crisis there, there's... Every time that he saw the news and got panicked, he went out.
Yeah.
Every time that it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So I think the best thing for the average investor is to understand and educate himself. If he is willing to educate himself, he will know more. And as he knows more, he will be able to make decisions that are not emotional, but are logical. So that's my first piece of advice. Because I've spent, literally years studying this and practicing it. Secondly, I think a very good key for the average investor is diversification. And we talk a lot about that on the Wealth Research Group newsletter. And if you go to our top menu, for example, and you click on special reports, you'll find a lot of reports you can download about diversification, proper diversification. So I think that more than anything else, that is key. Because if you're, for example, during
this
pandemic.
The best, is this what you're talking about when you mention it's the best way to double your income every 3 to 4 years indefinitely?
Are you talking about your income, like your active income?
No, I'm just looking over some of the content here, and it says the best way to double your income every 3 to 4 years forever, the 12-month, 12-plan strategy.
Well, that is active income. So right, that is how to double your salary every 3-4 years, which is not what's happening with most people. Most people are in dead end jobs. unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
We have a service economy in most of the Western world, and people get into the wrong careers, and it's very saddening. And in that report, for example, we talk about how to become much more valuable and to make sure that you become so indispensable
mm-hmm.
that there will be no reason for any employer, if you choose to be an employee, to let you go. He would rather keep you and double your salary every few years because you're just so valuable. And that report is how to become that valuable to others and to the marketplace. In the end, Nick, your active income for most people until they're about 50 to 55, for most people, their active income will be more important in their lives than their passive income. And the trick in the Western world is how to change that equation sooner. And in order to change that equation sooner, you need to become a business person for most people. So a business is obviously the ticket to become wealthier in the Western world sooner and not wait for those peak earning years, the traditional peak earning years that most people try to look for. So, but if you choose to be an employee, yeah. there's no reason why you should not reach those higher levels as well. You know, there are CEOs that make much more than most people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most business people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much again for sharing. It's wonderful insight, and I think it's very much worthwhile to get your hands on this report for those who are on the show tonight. And, you know, make sure you reach out to Lior. Now, Lior, when people want to grab this wonderful report and they maybe want to work with you, learn a bit more about all of the topics we've been talking about today, where are they going to find you?
Wealthresearchgroup.com is the only outlet. So, and if you want to stay updated with all of the top quality, the most important data, then on the homepage, the subscription form for the free letter, that's just the best way to do it, because that's where I can just everything that I'm learning, you know, real time, and I blast out 3 articles a week.
Fantastic. That's excellent. Thank you very much. Now, I've just had such a wonderful time on the call today, Lior, and everybody who was on the call tonight with us. If you want to touch base and grab that report, I definitely recommend that you do. I've seen this report myself in the past. Visit wealthresearchgroup.com. I will be making links available back to Lior and his Wealth Research Group. Lior, thanks very much for spending some time with me on the My Future Business Show today.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.